Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days. I mean, I
feel like the waterfall of thoughts. Every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City,
the Shambhala New York podcast.
Yes, welcome to episode 88 of the podcast. I am Dave, your host. I hope your new year is going well. Mine is fine. It's fine. It's not spectacular, but I wasn't expecting it to be spectacular. I'm managing my expectations. We'll see what happens. Today on the podcast, David Nickturn is going to be talking to us about resistance, that common beast of all people who try to do things to better themselves, be it meditation, be it exercise, be it writing a book. Resistance is always there. So this was a very timely talk for me personally, and I hope you enjoy it. But before we get to that, I do want to mention that the Shambhala Meditation Center of New York is presenting a special evening workshop with Lodro Rinzler. You know Lodro. He's a regular contributor to the podcast. This is about learning to work with strong emotions. Perhaps you have emotions. Perhaps sometimes they're strong and you don't know what to do with them. How do you deal with that? How can meditation be a tool for managing and relating with overwhelming emotions? Well, on Thursday evening, February 18th, you can join Lodro Rinzler and discuss and practice in such a way to begin to address these issues. Again, that's Thursday evening, February 18th. For more information and to register, click on ny.shambhala.org. Click program, scroll down to Learn to Work with Strong Emotions with Lodro Rinzler. And while you're there, maybe you'll see some other fun programs for you to take. And now, David Nickturn, as you know, is a Grammy-nominated and Emmy Award-winning musician, as well as a meditation teacher. You can hear my conversation with David Nickturn. I recorded a little while ago, just a few episodes back. If you haven't heard it, I recommend it. This is David Nickturn talking just a couple of weeks ago about resistance.
Probably everybody's here because you made a New Year's resolution that you're going to meditate finally this year. I had one student at Kripalu once who said she'd had a regular meditation practice for the last 20 years, every year, twice a year. So it's sort of like baseball. It's in the numbers. Your sitting average. Yeah, I'm sitting about 333 this year. I had a really good seventh inning. Then the eighth inning, I struck out. You know. So tonight's topic was, I took from Star Trek, not Star Wars, but Star Trek, which, if those of, do you remember the Borg on Star Trek, the computer people? Mm-hmm. And they would say, resistance is futile. So I just was borrowing that, because lords know, lords and ladies know, resistance is something that we all deal with in terms of trying to do any kind of practice, really. You know, any kind of practice. Almost practice means intrinsically that you're leaning into something that habitually you'd lean away from, right? So, there's a certain amount of discipline involved. And it's a very particular kind of discipline, which is really working consciously or conscientiously against habitual patterns that we have developed over eons. That's how we would say it in the Buddhist tradition, not just decades, but eons. So there's a kind of, we know And that's why the second half of the, what was the second half of the title? Was Come On, You Know You Wanna. You know. And so there's the resistance leaning this way and the Come On, You Know You Wanna leaning the other way. And then we have the good vibrato. That's how you get vibrato in music. Ding. So it's I Don't Wanna and Come On, You Know You Wanna. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. If there is no you wanna, there's no I don't wanna. Can you see that? It's just, I'm not gonna. And you wouldn't really have too much of a drama going on. Right? Just be a simple no thank you. You want to go down to Shambhala Center Tuesday night? No thank you. Well, I've been meaning to go there. I've been wanting to go. Come on, you know you wanna. There's something coming up on Tuesday night. You know, there's this art opening downtown. Maybe I'll go to that first, and then I'll have to miss the sitting part, but that's okay. But I'll come, I'll get there in time for the last half of the talk, you know. So there's a good idea for meditators or would-be meditators is some degree of self-reflection or kind of self-recognition of the ability to look into the mirror of your mind, of your life, catch your reflection coming back with some kind of honesty. And when we talk about teachers or teachings in the Buddha Dharma, in the Buddhist tradition, the teacher is the mirror principle. Good teachers are very mirror-like and reflect back to us our own image. As Trungpa Rinpoche used to say, warts and all. Beauty and all, warts and all. But if we don't have that desire, really, to see ourselves more clearly, there's not going to be the inspiration to do this kind of practice. Flat out, it's going to go down hard, you know. Because there is a certain amount of exertion, energy involved with taking a good look. And there's a certain amount of momentum involved with not doing that, you see? So in Shambhala, we would talk about this idea of whether there's clarity and intention in terms of seeing oneself and how, with honesty and kind of genuine openness. That's called the Great Eastern Sun Vision. You know, that sort of powerful forward vision where you look forward in your life and you stop driving in the rear view mirror and you consider what's really possible to do in this lifetime and to bring out one's own best qualities, really polish yourself. So that's the idea of the practice. It's not really to please somebody else or to play games or any of that stuff. It's pretty dry. You've come to the dry place. We give lots of time for everything to dry out. You don't get to put it in a machine. You just leave it out in the sun. Eventually it dries out. You know, all the excuses, all the kind of what ifs, ands or buts, they kind of dry out and become quite flat in a meditation practice. So we've been trying, you know, since we started doing this here in the West, you know, since really this 1970 or so, this particular tradition, to figure out what's cool and jazzy and what can we sell about this. And basically nobody's come up with anything so far. Neuroscience. That's the new one. Meditation's good for your brain. Oh, shit, I didn't even know I had one. Where is it? You know, where's your brain? Oh, that's good news, though. It's good for my brain. You know, okay. Meditation's good for your brain. 10 minutes into a session, you don't really care. It's like, when is that guy going to ring the bell? That's what my brain wants to know. So there is a kind of re-acclimation to a much bigger kind of sense of time and space than we normally allocate, and particularly lately. Oh my goodness, time and space, we don't have either of them, do we? We have no relationship to time and space. It's everything is going to... And it's no wonder people are going nuts and taking all kinds of pills and things like that. This is a crazy time we're living in. You know? When's the last time anybody went for a walk in the woods for no good reason? And left your iPhone behind. So we have to, you know, Buddhism traditionally, and Buddha also traditionally, is an antidote. It's not like a thing. You know how there are things? This is an antidote thing. It's because there's already a mess. This is how to clean it up. That's what the practice is. And it's a way to slow down the whole equation so you can see what elements am I dealing with really in my life? What does my life really feel like? You have to slow down to feel, because if you're moving too fast, you can't feel anymore. You know? And if your spiritual practice has a high tempo to it, you still can't feel. You know, if you're just adding a lot of buzz kind of energies to your world through spiritual practice, this is more about having fewer ideas about things, having fewer notions about what's going to happen, and leaving yourself some time to feel what is there, and trusting yourself, trusting your wisdom and your capacity to feel whole and as you are. Not if you do this or if you manifest that. So this is kind of a reversal of the ordinary logic. The ordinary logic is if I go fast enough, I can catch it. You know, it's the roadrunner mind. The carrot and the, you know, the horse and the carrot. And it runs and runs and runs. The carrot just keeps moving further away. So I just want to say that logic applies to spiritual practice as much as to anything else. Why would it be any different? Why would this all of a sudden be a magic pill? There are no magic pills. But the good news, and this is the other side of the equation, is that we can be happy with very little if you learn how to do it. You can be content. And I've said a lot of times, this is my definition of a yogi. When somebody says somebody's a yogi, I say, well, can they be content with very little, even if they're living in a mansion? Or are they impatient, unsatisfied, stressed out? Because then the mansion turns into a hell realm. So if you can have just what you have and feel a certain amount of ease and contentment and joy and peace, then you're a good yogi. You might even look like a neuroscientist or a dentist, you know, or even a guitar player, for God's sake, you know. It's possible. It's how your mind shapes your world. So the first point is, if we don't have some kind of intention or vision, you know, we have to have what we call in the Dharma a view, a clarity of vision, in which we see something, some possibility, right, of how to be. That has to come first, because otherwise everything will unravel. You're chasing something, you don't even know what your target is, you know. I call that the Stevie Wonder and the Pinata syndrome. It's bad enough that you're blindfolded, but where's the pinata, you know? And how many of you do feel like you're just blindfolded and swinging a bat around looking for some treasure, you know? How many of you feel like you have the right boyfriend or girlfriend, for God's sake? The right job. The right parents, for goodness sake. Right? Good for you. Yeah. You know, we think of this as unusual these days. Yeah, my parents are great people, you know, love them. They really took good care of me. You know, therapists would be out of business, right, Mark? There'd be no shrinks left anywhere on the planet. So we have to have some kind of vision in life. Everybody has it, whether it's stated or unstated. Your vision is what you're going for, who you think you are, what you think you could be, what you could become. We're always working on that. It's good to work on that. Then you go, okay, I want to move in that direction. What does it take? So some of us here heard about either Buddha or a great being of some kind, a great teacher. And an old friend of mine used to say, she saw a picture of the Dalai Lama. She said, I'll have what he's having. I thought, well, great ad for Buddhism. I'll have what he's having. So that's vision. You see something, some quality, that reminds you of your own potential. Right? That's one part of the lineage of teachers. These thousands of years of lineage. I'll have what they're having. And then there's, with vision, then there's a notion of a path, right? You know, if you see something, I want to get, you know, follow the yellow brick road, right? Great Dharma movie. If you follow that road, you're going to get where you're going. Okay, so there's a path. I have to stay on the path. And then we could have some kind of intention. That's the first. I'm going to go through a series of I-O-N words, right? Intention. Vision was the first. Then you have some intention, which leads to aspiration. Give me a little, can I have a little beat here? First you have a vision, then you have an intention, then you have aspiration. Right? You aspire. Then, what do you think comes next? Well, we got to stay with your IONs here. Let's be. Action. Who said?
Action.
Action, that's good, yeah. Okay, anybody else?
Procrastination.
Good man. Did you hear what he said? Procrastination. So you have activation, you have action. And you have a forward motion, of course, then every action has the equal and opposite reaction. So you have procrastination. And then you have to have exertion. Again. So if we don't have a sense, look, we're all on probably at different stages of what I'm talking about. You might have come here just, what's the view of this place? What's the cookie? You know, and that's a good, you know, I think it's a fair question. So, you know, I could be a smarty pants and I could say journey without goal and the path is the goal and stuff like that. You know, and it's all true too. But we're talking simpler language here. The goal is some kind of sanity. Let's just be blunt about it. Can you live? And then you can go up from there. Sanity to me is ground zero. If we don't feel sane, if we don't feel balanced inside, internally, and you can't face this very challenging situation out here, it's going to take you down. people are going down out there. And I don't want to say anything about politics, so I won't. But it's hard to find the notion that those people are going to lead us up, where we love, lift us up where we belong, you know. That doesn't look like it's going that way. So we've got to regroup as a group of, you know, kind of people who want to live in a sane world. There's certainly a lot of energy going the other way. And sanity is at ground zero. But beyond that, how about compassion? How about wisdom? How about thriving? How about physical and energetic vitality? How about fearlessness? How about kindness? You know? Those are eternal qualities that people always gravitate back towards. Every time, every place. So we have to have some stamina, some gumption, and then we reapply after we procrastinate. We reapply and we unprocrastinate, or we crastinate. What do we do? What's the opposite?
Action.
Yeah, we move back into reactivation. And lean in. And then along the way, see, along the way, you go, I forgot why I'm doing this again. Can you remind? And I tell you, if you come next weekend, Saturday at about 3:30, that's when it happens, you go, huh? What were we doing here? Why did I sign up for this, you know? When is this going to be over? Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to be coming back to my breath. Nah. What's the big deal about coming out your breath? That's not so great. I've been doing it all day. I got nothing to show for it. People who've sat know what I'm talking about. It isn't this. Those people never heard of Buddhism. I just meditate and I go into a blissful state. I call it the secret garden meditation school. I'm in my secret garden. And no one can harm me here. Okay, don't ring the bell because I'm peaceful and happy here. And when you ring the bell, I'm going to have to re-enter my real life, which is a mess at the moment. Okay, I'll just stay. So, you know, why gild the lily if you're just going to have to take it off again? If you don't remember anything else I said tonight, I won't remember anything I said tonight, as most of you who know me know, but why gild the lily if you're just going to have to take it off again? So we're going for bare consciousness here. Like, is there anything in our fundamental ground awareness that's cool and interesting and good? Can you sit and be plain? Simple human being. Can you abide with your state of mind? Or does your own state of mind drive you crazy? Let's be honest. Most of us, when we sit, we say, I don't like sitting. It's because your own state of mind is driving you crazy. And you've covered it over with layers and layers of activity. Now you strip it down and you're just being simple and present. You go like, I'm not that comfortable with myself. And you could blame it on the light in the room or the temperature or the mosquitoes, but we gotta be a little more honest than that and say, how are you when you're just sitting and being very present? How do you feel? There's gonna be some part of you that's gonna feel better than you ever felt in any other context. You're tasting the Buddha's nectar in those moments. The awakened mind has nectar in it. Like an elixir. But then we want to bottle it, and it's gone. Right? So we touch in, right, to some kind of present awareness, and then we just let it go. Don't try to bottle it. That's called the impermanence elixir. It's a very special drink. You can be fully present without any grasping to the consequences of that or trying to sustain it in any way. You can do it. Everybody, by the way, everybody can do this. The idea that Buddha was some kind of freak, you know, is wrong. Just a regular human being. Or some kind of, you know, magical being. You study it, you'll see he was just a regular human being working with exactly the same situation that we have now, no different. Nothing's different about it at all. You know, it's like a set change. That's what history is. History is a set change, and we, you know, just put on different costumes. And, but don't you think he wanted to, like, understand his relationships better? Don't you think he wanted to understand life and death better? Don't you think he was trying to figure out the relationship between materialism and spiritual life? So we have in the Buddha, we have a completely perfect mirror for our own situation. This is different. If you're a practitioner, you see Buddha as a mirror, not as some special case. You have a lot of respect. It's very healthy respect. Somebody could be that serious a practitioner. That's respectable. But you can do it too. That's our tagline. You can do it too. But you have to have some clarity about the view, some intention, some aspiration. You have to activation. Use the procrastination as part of the path. Don't see it as a solution to anything. Re-exert. And then you have fruition. It's the last ION. Fruition. The fruit is perfect. Because it just is completely being tuned into what things are already. How could you have any better fruit than that? It includes kiwi fruits and mangoes and papayas. Those things just grow here, by the way. Did you know that? Did you ever think about that when you're eating a mango? Where the hell did that come from? Nobody made it up. So the word fruition is like you get to eat a lot of fruit. The fruit of your own being, the richness of your own being. Without a lot of need to dress it up or hide or, you know, pretend you're somebody else. That kind of whole thing goes away. You just be yourself. But we've got a lot of habits. Don't you think so? I'm going to open it up for discussion. Like, we have a lot of habits. I have a lot of habits. I'll just speak for myself. It's probably better form. And certain reactions to things that feel like, wow, where the hell did that come from? You know, some of it's from growing up in New York. It's like, are you talking to me? You know that vibe? But this morning, I was walking down the street and a little old Chinese lady came walking up to me with a piece of paper and had an address on it. And just, the rest was in Chinese, you know. And she's just going like, I'm lost, can you help me, you know. Haven't you been that person? I've been that person. I've been in Asia a lot the last bunch of years. I've been in Tokyo going like, and I have a little piece of paper, you know. So, you know, we're not talking about monolithic things here, just how to be a good person. But we have a lot of habits covering up, like, you know, covering up because we don't want to get hit in the face, basically, or the gut. So what the real invitation is to do is open up skillfully with a sort of open heart that is also discerning. That is discernment that can separate out what's going on in this situation, you know? And also we're trying to dial down our reactivity, our habitual thing. But the beauty of it is just sitting there hour after hour after hour after hour after hour. You go, I don't need anybody to do this for me. I got the tools. I've got the method. I've got some understanding of the view. And I'm taking just a kind of nice, soft, gentle, but penetrating look at myself. And that's our notion of a good way to spend time here. You don't spend all your time doing that. Then you go out. You should really, you see that door there? That double door? We want to just dissolve that so that how you're in here becomes very synchronized with how you are once you walk through there. Shouldn't be you got your spiritual side and your material side. There's just you, good, virtuous person, nice, uplifted attitude, working with whatever challenges you're working with, and you can work with those here, and then you go out there, and it's just really more of the same. If you practice loving kindness in here, you go out there and you practice loving kindness. If you practice mindfulness in here, you go out there and you practice mindfulness. So, pretty sound. Thank you. So, that's just a little glimpse. But resistance, figure out what you want to do. Like, I'd like to get enlightened in this lifetime. How about that idea? Would any of you drink to that with me? Yeah, raise your hand if you'd like to get enlightened in this very lifetime. Wow, we've got a common thing going on. And you think about what that means. It means being less neurotic a little bit. Less hung up, less stuck, more open-hearted. You know, it's pretty simple what it means. There's a lot of fancy stuff in Buddhism. If you like fancy stuff, it means fancy stuff. You know, there's 9 of this and 10 of that and 15 of the other thing. So it could mean knowing about that too. But whatever you think it means, then we've got to move towards that however we can. Whatever helps you to do that. But along the way, then we go, I don't wanna. And that's okay. That's called resistance, procrastination. We just got to cut through that. Frankly, that's all there is to it. We could say a lot of fancy stuff about it, but you just got to cut through that. But here's what to watch out for. The logic that solidifies your resistance into a kind of cause celeb, you know. Here's why I'm not going to that place to meditate. You know, those people. What people? Everybody here is either somebody's child or somebody's mother or father. If you don't like me, at least give me credit. I'm Ethan's father. You know, I did something right. So I think we got to just look at resistance and the logic that forms around it. You know what I mean? The kind of clever resistance is not so great. Regular, ordinary resistance is going to be our path for a long time. You know, Buddha had it. Right up to the end. They kept throwing stuff at him. Which all added up to, wouldn't you really rather be doing this other thing? Wouldn't you really rather have the pleasure? You know, wouldn't you really be rather have a nice, solid, fixed sense of yourself? You know, that you could just abide in that. Wouldn't you rather just roil in your emotional baggage? How about that one? That's probably the most common seductress, don't you think, or seductor? Wouldn't you rather just be pissed and kind of resentful? Yeah, that feels good. That's solid. I can bank on that. Wouldn't you rather, you know, be having... I saw this movie about Noma, number one restaurant in the world in Copenhagen. Wouldn't you rather be there tonight? You know? It's a trap. It's all a trap. So let's discuss a little bit. And, you know, you tell me, you know, if you don't mind sticking to the topic of what your aspiration is and what your resistance is, like what those two things feel like, how you're working with it, compare notes a little bit, any questions you have about anything that we said. Let's take a minute. Thank you.
Thank you. So I think my resistance is just giving stuff up. Mm-hmm. I'm just attached to a lot of things, a lot of habits, a lot of predispositions, a lot of ideas, a lot of behaviors. And I have a hard time giving that stuff up over 23 years and then a short period of time practicing. And I think that is my pull side. I don't know what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then the push towards is obviously the life that you get from doing this work. And that's, you know, you wanna. And of course I do. And that's why I'm here. That's why I'm sitting here. But I guess old habits die hard. So here I am, and that's a good sign.
And the irony, Graham, is you're wearing a Superman shirt.
There's no irony there at all.
No irony. Yeah, so how would you, you know, round that off if you were going to say, how will that affect your next bunch of moves? Everything you said. Okay, you said you have a thicket of kind of stuff that you feel very entrenched with or strongly attached to. So
yeah.
What are you going to do?
That was the question. Answer that for me. Mm-hmm. No, but I guess that's. I mean, I have to live and I have to undergo the pain of dealing with the repercussions of my behavior, which happens on a day-to-day basis when I make poor decisions. So I guess what I'm going to do is fail miserably and then continue to get up and try to reach towards this higher self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's one element in there that sort of would be a nice mixer, you know, is not knowing. Like, for example, when you said, I'm going to fail miserably, I thought, I'm not sure. Right? Maybe you'll neither fail nor succeed, which is an interesting space. You know, I spent most of my life in that space. Haven't the rest of you? So I would, if this was a kind of mixing board, I'd mix in a little more not knowing, just as a flavor.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, now the guy without the beard.
I thought what you said, what did you say about being open, but at the same time, we kind of have had scars and have to be, you know, aware and guarded so that we don't get hurt. It's kind of finding the balance of being open, but not so open that, you know, you get mugged or something, you know, that could happen. So for me, it's kind of finding that balance of the openness, but then the awareness. And
yeah, that's the word that was coming up, awareness, right? Open and aware is a different kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I use the word discernment, but really it's based on what you're saying, awareness. Open and aware is... probably the combo. Yeah, because awareness has sort of some elements in it that are appropriate, situation appropriate. It's called skillful means in our tradition. Awareness breeds skillful means. So you know what the right action is. And for example, you're not really benefiting that person by allowing them to mug you. You're not being a good bodhisattva at all. You can decide if you just want to give them the money, if you think they need it. But allowing them to mug you is just going to perpetuate their garbage dump. It will. Because they're just caught up in a cycle of aggression. Never leads to anything good. So awareness is kind of all our weapons, the ornaments that you see around when you see these kind of colored, crazy people in these images in Tantra that are holding swords and things, are weapons of awareness and discernment. That's what we use. That's our kind of approach to the military side of life. Awareness and discernment and skillful action. You can think of the benefit of the person. You don't have to shut down your heart. You know, when that woman today first came up to me, I thought, oh, this is just another person who's got a little shtick and she wants money. And I just took a second look. Right. You know, and I said, she's me in Asia. I recognize the energy of it. So that person could be you in another situation. It's really true. You know, we've been aggressive. We've mugged people in our own ways, right, at times. Have you ever? I don't mean taking their money, but I mean, you know, unleashed your aggression on somebody else.
Oh, yeah. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. And it never has good outcome. I've never really experienced a good outcome from that.
Right. And I feel sometimes that happens the more you stay guarded and try for that not to happen. It's going to happen somehow anyways.
Yeah.
You're going to let that aggression out. Yeah. You just have to find a constructive way.
Do you study martial arts at all?
No.
Do you do any sports or anything like that, physical?
I'm a dancer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, wow. Like what kind of dance?
Primarily classical ballet, but with a company that's with a lot of different fusions of dance.
How great. Do you love it?
Most days, yeah.
No, but do you like the thing itself?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, see. But you had to practice hard, right? Mm-hmm. To get to the level you're at, right? Mm-hmm. So you know even in that context, there's a lot of resistance to doing that practice, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think this is any different. People are hoping that this will be different, and it's no different. That's great. Thank you. There's a young lady right here.
I was wondering if you could speak to a different form of resistance and also a resistance that comes up in a certain kind of mindfulness practice, and something I think a lot of us have probably been discussing in the past week or so, which is around New Year's resolutions and letting go of, I don't know, things that happened in 2015 or whatever it is. And I know a lot of people like to talk about, like, you know, making lists and burning them and then having resolutions and starting over and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I've had a lot of conversations with friends who are also meditators in different traditions about whether it makes sense to have lists of things that we burn, and if, and then if that's sort of a form of resistance and a sort of a resistance to practice,
yeah,
or whether there's a way of sort of incorporating those things more into our lives, or sort of if the way to think about sort of the ills of the past are best understood not in terms of not just a letting go, but of a harsh release, and instead of sort of an incorporation, and that to me feels like very much a part of a resistance and mindfulness, or resistance toward a mindfulness practice. It sort of fits into that thinking for me, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, given I'm sure a lot of us have had thoughts along these lines in the past week or two.
Wouldn't it be cool if you could actually hear my thoughts? I wouldn't have to speak. I would have to speak to kind of explain. What was that? There's been lots of movies with that idea in them. Well, you know, as you were thinking, it's so interesting, as you were talking, I was thinking, like, what do I think about this? And I was trying to tune into why is this bothering you, kind of a little bit. Like on a certain level, like, what are you talking about? You know, you're talking about making lists? Is that the essence of it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, a lot of my friends make lists on New Year's of either resolutions or things that they want to let go of. Maybe that's, I don't know if other people have that experience.
Well, what about taking last year's list and just forgetting about a new one? What did you do last year, and how different was it? So, you know, I make lists from a practical point of view, like, got to do this, got to do that, just because I can't remember all the things I'm supposed to do. That's a sort of a functional thing. Here's a thought. Just make an intention to practice a certain amount of time this year and do it, period. So I've had that easy for me because I'm on a track that you have to do a certain amount of practice, so I don't have to think about it. So just say, I'm going to do a daily practice of 20 to 30 minutes a day, 4 to 5 times a week, and I'm going to do periodic weekend workshops or retreats, and I'm going to do a one-week retreat this year. And that's it. Just do it. Wouldn't that make life incredibly simple? Because otherwise, you know, this can happen, and we're just going to go around. And so the idea of, you know, making a schedule for a whole year of practice. That's how I work with students one-to-one. That's how I do it. I say, look, I'm not a shrink or anything like that. I can't really tell you what's right or wrong with you, but I know how to teach people how to meditate. So if we're going to do this, you got to meditate, otherwise our conversation's going to get silly, you know, and you could have a better one with somebody else. So 4 to 5 times a week, I'm not an everyday guy. I recognize people have their thingies, but 4 to 5 times a week, depending on the person, if you're just starting, maybe 10 or 15 minutes a day, 15, 20 minutes a day. If you've got some stamina, 20 to 30 minutes a day. Maybe on the weekend you can do a little more. Then you come to some weekend programs, some intensives. You do a little bit of intensive practice is very good. And then a retreat during the year. And just be a householder practitioner. Don't spend a lot of time thinking about, oh, maybe I'll go off and live at a monastery or something like that. Forget about it. Unless you really think you want to do that. But most of us don't want to do that. That's not who this group is. There's another group across town of people who are karma-weary, don't see the glisten in everything that we see, you know, the possibility of like shining over here, doing that, making money, being famous, you know, the ordinary kind of things. But this practice is so good for people like us because it's just like slipping in a Mickey into the thing. You're still having the drink, but it's spiked with this thing. So I just go, okay, let's run with the householder yogi approach. It's a nice format. Make a formula, stick to it. And then you don't have to recreate the wheel. Does that make any sense? You said one other thing, Colette, I just want to quickly say, which I understood to be purification of past. Really looking at your past. Where have I been? What have I done? And in our practice, there are ways of purifying. So we don't just say, just be here now. But sometimes you look back and you come to some feeling about, that wasn't exactly right, I'd like to clean that up. And there are certain ways to clean up, get more current without a kind of baggage or residue hanging over you. So that is part of the training too.
When does that part come in?
Well, it's really there from the beginning. You could say it's part of contemplative meditation, you know. Have you ever done metta, maitri, loving kindness? I mean, it's in there. You know, you go like, you know, I've been really too nasty to this person here. It's unnecessary. Let me send them loving kindness, you know. So it's in contemplative practice. It's in some of the, it's in the Nundro practices that there are. You know, you have a sense of catching up to and clearing up some of the feeling of residue. Okay? Ça va?
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm so glad I came tonight.
And so am I.
Thank you.
So
thank
am I.
You so much.
Yeah.
I feel almost excited. Wow. You know, I do the metta every morning, but this is the first time I sat with my breath for longer than 5 minutes in months. And the way you spoke about everything tonight, you really nailed it for me, is I kind of knew it, that I didn't want to sit with what I was, my mental state, and feel it. So it's not so much that I was running around as much as I was distracting myself, which is probably the same thing in a different form. So every time you say, cut through, I noticed that I felt despondent, because that to me always implied it's kind of a self-will, self-motivation. You've got to just do it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of never really helped me. But tonight it did, because it made me realize, you know, instead of the same old question of what's wrong with me, which can just come up with a laundry list of all those answers, it was what has worked in the past, because I've been in and out of meditation for years, starting when I was a teenager, you know. And every time I get out of the habit, it's because of some external thing, probably for everyone, but coming back into the habit, since I seem to have a lot of trouble with that self-motivation, whenever I think you just answered it, if I join a group, and I just felt like I got it sitting here, if I can just commit to a group even once a week, I can get back into the habit. And maybe you can talk more about what cut through actually means in terms of the mindset or the action, because I know, you know, you can have so much knowledge about, so I set up a little meditation center in the middle of my room with the pillow there and a little altar, and it's like, just go sit.
Sit on it.
It's like, click, no, let's turn on the TV. Oh, no, let me call, what's her name that I haven't talked to?
Or let me move the things around on the altar.
Yeah, let me go. Or clean out my closet, anything.
Yeah.
But sit with what I don't want to think or feel.
Sure.
And yet tonight when I did sit with it, even though I was waiting for you to ring, and it was, I did get to that place where it wasn't so bad to sit with it.
Yeah.
And I know that when I do it regularly, I just, it doesn't feel that dry. I know what you mean by dry, but it just feels like something to look forward to more than something to avoid.
Yeah.
So I feel excited right
It's the
now.
Excuses that are drying up.
Yeah.
That's what's drying up.
Yeah. So thank
Experience
you.
Is quite vibrant, you know, actually. And as you're saying that, Marie, I'm thinking cutting through butter is still cutting through. It doesn't have to be aggression. Just like, you know how you cut butter?
Nice. That's a nice one.
Yeah. So we're not talking about increasing the amount of aggression. There's plenty already. But the cutting through is more separating out the wholesome from the unwholesome.
The wanna, I don't wanna thing is, for me at least, it gets, well, I was gonna say complicated, maybe just simple, but the do it, I don't wanna do it can, actually, I can do that with such aggression, I guess, in my head, that I wind up in like a hell realm. And it's kind of paradoxical for me, because when I stop or let myself stop the I want to, which is I should voice, then I wind up doing things. So for me, it's really kind of, or it's been more of a giving up of pushing myself with a wanna. And then I don't want to say always, but it feels right now like always. Like when I stop trying to make myself do things, I do them. Things are always better. So I wonder, can you say something about kind of how will functions in there, or making you know, trying to make yourself do something?
As you're talking, Mark, I'm thinking about Bobby Fischer and Boris Spassky. Did you see that movie?
Yeah.
You know, like you're looking at the board, you're trying to play six pieces down the game, you know. Those guys could visualize the whole game in their heads, you know. So it's good for chess. It's good for chess. But Bobby Fischer is like a crazy person, you know. Did you see the end of the movie? Where they showed the real Bobby Fischer and it's like, you know, So, you know, we don't want to go too far down with the moves we're going to make.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's accurate.
Yeah.
Because what I kind of my default is to try to figure everything out, and it is all the way to the end of my life, not just a few moves.
You play chess, right?
No.
No chess? Okay.
No. Just in my head.
Okay. So this is an interesting movie, though, because then on the other hand, I saw another. I like documentaries. Do you guys like documentaries? I like just hearing about what real people did or are trying to pull off or do. Or, you know. So there was this one on 60 Minutes. Any of you see this about this kid from Bali? And he's a prodigy. Have you heard about him? Yeah. He's a jazz keyboard player. He's 12 now. But at 7, he had never touched an instrument. You'll see why I'm talking about this, other than that it's just fun, because it's so amazing in a way. So he's, 7, and there's musicians in his family, his father's a musician and stuff, and he's hyperactive. He's got a lot going on, so they get him a keyboard. So like at 8, he's playing like Art Tatum. It's crazy. He's playing Thelonious Monk. At 8, 1 year into it, no teacher, no nothing. And then you see him, and you go, well, it isn't just like one of those classical geniuses who's going like, yeah, I got this, you know. He's got the whole attitude. He's like a 12-year-old junkie. It's unbelievable. He's like, and then he's playing with these completely grown-up. So Wynton Marsalis comes in and goes like, what? And he takes the kid on, and now he's playing concerts at, Lincoln Center and stuff like that with the top jazz guys in the world. He's 12 years old, and he's got this little cool little hang. You know, he's just kind of like, he walks in, he goes, and, you know, that's the opposite. He looked very healthy mentally to me as opposed to Bobby Fischer, because he's willing to go with it a little bit and just see where it leads. And look how far he got. He understood that mind is intricate, but that it's playful and that you have to wait for things to happen before you can play the next note. You know, things are going to happen and you kind of play in. So if you thought of those two extremes, maybe, you know, the kind of playing the whole game out in your head before it even happens, and kind of the jazz, 12-year-old jazz kid who's just like kind of, and he was so relaxed. He had no ego. It wasn't like, you know, none of that stuff. He was so ripe.
Well, I think when I stop trying to play everything out in my head, and I actually do stop it, that's when things happen.
That's exactly when things happen.
Good. So that's kind of like giving up on this wanna, I don't wanna.
Yeah.
It's going in circles, and at some point, this is crazy.
Yeah,
and then something happens.
Remember Milarepa, you know, they just had to beat him up and wear him out a little bit for a couple of decades, you know. Then he relaxed a little bit. Are we working on it?
Yes, we are.
It occurs to me tonight, in kind of a flash, and I hope I can express it, that what happens in meditation, where the thought comes up and we let it go, and it comes up and we let it go, and it's like, oh my goodness, what the heck am I thinking of, and we let it go, is like a role modeling for dealing with I don't wanna. Because if I can look at I don't wanna as just a thought passing, even if it comes 30 million times, and not solidify it or make it mean anything, then it doesn't have the same power. The thoughts can be there and continue to be there, and I can still get my coat on and walk out the door and get the cab and come here.
Lori, excuse me for switching traditions for a minute. Hallelujah! That is so well said. That is
Thank you for inspiring.
Yeah, that's so well said. That's exactly it. It's not that the thoughts are just going to go away. You're just not following them in the same way, and you're practicing letting them come and go. And you're doing it gently, and you're doing it with some precision, and gradually you go, okay, you guys have owned me, but you're just weather, you know? And then the wisdom element of the thought can come out and go like, oh, I had a good idea. I think I'll do that part of it. And the obsessive part of it just starts to wither. It's like good pruning, but that was so well said, Lori. Have you been practicing a long time?
Intermittently.
Okay.
Not that long, actually.
Yeah, okay.
About a year and a half.
But who taught you how to meditate like that? Here? Well, did they teach you here to do that?
Well, I've done my, what you call level one was with Ethan.
So Ethan taught you how to do that? Okay.
A lot of other great teachers, but yes.
I'm feeling good up here. That's so it's so energizing to see all of you tonight, right after the new year and so forth, and just to know that Shambhala, you know, I travel a lot, so just to come home, this is a home game, and to see that Shambhala is alive and well. Thank you so much for coming tonight, and I'll stick around for a while. There's snacks, right, and so forth. And, you know, let's hang out informally if you like.
Yeah, let's hang out. Thanks for listening. Visit our website, nyshambhala.org, for more information about classes and weekend retreats. You can come see our weekly Dharma gathering in person every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, where you can see David Nickturn and all the other great teachers that contribute to this podcast. If you happen to live in a different city, there's probably a Shambhala Meditation Center near you. Look us up. We'd like to see you wherever you are. I hope your new year is a splendid one, and I hope you lose all the weight that you desire and find all the love that you seek. I'm going to go lay down. Thanks for listening. Later.